Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Hello to you, the listener. Thanks for tuning in to Local Talk today. I'm Gail Seidler, your host. We have an interesting mix of stories on the show today. Later in the show, we'll bring you a report from Sacred Stone Camp on the banks of the Cannonball and Missouri Rivers in North Dakota, where efforts are being made by several Native American tribes and their supporters to stop the Bakken pipeline. We will also hear from Tom and Doug of the one and only Tom and Doug Show, who will tell us about a special live broadcast that they have planned in Ames for Labor Day weekend. Ames Progressive Alliance is here for their monthly roundup, let's call it. They will be talking about accessibility for residents of Ames with disabilities, which was a topic at a recent Ames Progressive Alliance event, and they'll continue that conversation today. So I'm going to turn it over now to our Ames Progressive Alliance folks, Victoria Sapinski and Ann Kinzel. Thanks for being here. I'm going to let you introduce your other guests.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you and good morning. We always appreciate that KHOI Community Radio provides a monthly programming opportunity for the Ames Progressive Alliance to discuss progressive issues and events. Ann Kinzel and I are here on the fourth Friday of each month, so please mark your calendars. So let's dive into our topic for today. We have great guests to help us continue, as Gail mentioned, the conversation that was the focus of the APA's monthly Progressive Pints. Last week on the 18th at Torrent Brewery, we invited community members to join us for a discussion on the challenges that are encountered by residents with both physical and intellectual disabilities. We have three very knowledgeable guests. Two have joined us in the studio, and one will be calling in. First on the phone, we'd like to welcome Jan Bauer, whom many of you know, as she has been for many years the chair of the Storey County Democrats. She has been a major force in local and national Democratic politics. She is very sharp and well-traveled, but today she is here to share a very particular aspect of her life, and that is her challenges with physical disabilities. Jan developed juvenile rheumatoid arthritis at the age of 2.5 to 3 and other medical complications. She has always been mobile, but due to operations on her joints, the use of a wheelchair has been necessary. Hi, Jan. Are you there?
I'm here. Good morning.
Good morning. Very good. I'm also going to, at this time, introduce our guests who are joining us in the studio, Jennifer Ellis and Andrea Keith. Jennifer Ellis is the executive director of Friendship Arc Homes here in Ames. Prior to Friendship Arc Homes, Jennifer worked with Genesis, which is a nonprofit in Boone that provides services to people with disabilities. With that history, she came to Friendship Arc Homes, who has built an organization that has several houses in Ames that provides family-style living, 24-hour care, transitional living, and dayhab services for its core members and many others who participate in day programs. I am a member, actually, of the Friendship Arc Homes board, and so I know that Jennifer brings a wealth of knowledge, and we're very fortunate to have her. Hi, Jennifer.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you here. So, and the third guest is Andrea Keith, and she's a counselor with Iowa Vocational Rehabilitation with the Iowa Vocational Rehabilitation Service, VOCHAB, as I've heard people refer to it as. You'll have to tell me if that's okay with you. Mm-hmm. Their mission is to work for and with individuals with disabilities to achieve employment, independence, and economic goals. There are 13 offices across the state, and the office located in Ames serves 12 counties. I actually ran into a mother recently who had visited with Andrea and had her daughter, a disabled daughter, with her, and she told me, "I finally feel that I have a partner who's going to help me make my daughter's life better." So no pressure there,
None
Andrea.
At all. Thank you for
okay.
having me.
So hello and welcome, and I just wanted to add that I think many of us, including myself, and I include myself in this group, can live our lives, and I certainly did, without understanding the challenges and assistance needed by many individuals with disabilities. And I'm not casting any blame here, because that understanding comes when circumstances happen in our lives. Our parents age and become frail and have a lot of concerns. Accidents happen, and sometimes many people are just born with disabilities. So first I want to start out with Jan and say welcome again, and please tell us a little bit more about who you are and some of the challenges that you have encountered and continue to encounter.
Okay. Well, thanks again for having me on the show. I grew up in small-town Iowa, which was Ziering, Iowa, actually in Story County, where everyone knew my abilities and my limitations. So what we now know as reasonable accommodations were just a part of my life. So frankly, I really didn't think of myself as being disabled or handicapped in any way. I was just another one of the kids in town. It was when I came to Iowa State that my eyes were definitely opened to the challenges that I faced having mobility issues, shall we say. I was still walking, but I was very limited in that. So when I landed at Iowa State, and the first thing you see on the central campus are these gorgeous buildings with these incredible amounts of steps. Obviously, that was going to be a challenge. So I was working with Voc Rehab at the time, who was very helpful in helping me face and then figure out where to start. And it was through space and scheduling that helped me find the buildings that I could at least get into. And this was pre-ADA, pre-Americans with Disabilities Act being even conceived of. We're talking the late 70s, early 80s. So I became very familiar with the back entrances to many of these buildings because they were the most accessible. But still there were steps, there were thresholds that needed to be crossed, and I think Harvard Hall was about the only one that was had a completely flat threshold that I could get in and out of. But still, with rheumatoid arthritis, there were the vast distances to be crossed. And so with drivers and patients from space and scheduling and just a lot of help from other friends and faculty members, I managed to get around Iowa State for four years when I got my bachelor's in political science, and then another 2 years to get my master's of public administration.
Could you expound just a little bit on the changes that ADA made for you and for others, and maybe specifically on campus? And I'm also going to add that in my head I have an image of you hugging Senator Harkin. So he's a particularly special person when it comes to having made sure that the ADA was, the Americans with Disabilities Act was put into force.
Yes, definitely. Well, frankly, I was well beyond school and beyond the employment force by the time ADA was passed in 1990. Hmm. So it was a frustrating time for me because I had this master's and I had a pretty good-looking resume. And I got lots of interviews around Central Iowa and beyond. But the minute they laid eyes on me and saw the physical limitations, the interview was pretty much over. And frankly, there wasn't a lot of recourse back then. So we're talking through the 80s. And it wasn't a particularly good time to be out there looking for a job either. It was tough.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was the beginning of my search for employment and pretty much the end. So I'm permanently disabled now, and I've landed in the Story County Democrats as a volunteer. But, you know, we identify ourselves through what we do, and when you're disabled, you don't have a profession. You know, and to, I called myself for a long time a professional volunteer. you know, most people are attorneys or secretaries, housewives. They're something. They've got something to identify themselves as. And so when you're disabled, it's tough to portray a self-image to the rest of the world. And you encounter that pretty much every day. When we were talking about the other day, when you just checking into a hotel or even checking out a grocery store, if you're in a wheelchair and someone else is behind you pushing you, the person that's doing the pushing gets the attention of the person you're trying to do business with.
Yep.
And it's like you're not a person. You're just sitting there. Even if you're the one with the money in your hand, cash in your hand, credit card, you're not the person that people typically will reach out to and engage in.
Yeah. Well, and I think sometimes as we were chatting about on the phone the other day, it's beyond that you're sitting in the wheelchair, that there's sometimes this confusion between a physical disability and an intellectual disability. And anyone listening to you and knowing your history knows that anything intellectual is not an issue with you.
Well, it can be frustrating. But I need to get back to the question you actually asked me, what differences I've seen on campus since ADA has been passed and become, you know, a natural part of our society. Curbs are no longer an issue. They're not really there. Every building on campus, there's an accessible entrance, and it's usually at the front entrance. It's not the back door. You're mm-hmm. not going in with the maintenance staff any longer or parking with the dumpsters. So that's nice. And it's just kind of a different attitude amongst people. I remember being in, I'm kind of contradicting myself here, but when I was in traveling in Bulgaria with my family, and I was being, you know, out in public and not being forced to beg on the street corner, people were just looking like, oh, my God. And then when I'd have a conversation with someone, they were just dumbfounded to see someone who was disabled being regarded with some respect.
Yeah.
And so it has had an impact. I think here at home, definitely. But with a recent conversation with Senator Harkin, they're seeing worldwide results. Nations are reaching out to the U.S., and the issue is just going global.
Yeah. Well, and I'm just going to say one more thing before we move on here, and that is that when we were talking about – I had asked you about campus, but really it's not just campus, but there's still a lot of improvements that need to be made. And you said when you've traveled
sure.
that doors open, right?
It's amazing. Yeah, we were up above the Arctic Circle in Norway, and you roll up to a store, and the doors would automatically open. And here I know how challenging a door can be if it doesn't have the automatic push button that will activate the mechanism to open it, because all doors here are so conventional.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is about Scandinavia. Maybe it's the sleek clean lines of the architecture that encourage these mechanized doors, but it was incredible.
Yeah. Well, thanks. We'll come back to you. I just want to let's move on and make sure that we get all of our guests
sure.
in here. And I just want to turn now to Andrea from Voc Rehab, or Iowa Vocational Rehab Service. And perhaps we can start with a little history about IVRS and the services that you offer. And I'm assuming that Jan's experiences are all familiar stories to you.
Absolutely. We help – thank you for having me. We help individuals, obviously, with all barriers to employment that are disability-related. We began in 1920 after World War I, and we had a lot of veterans, obviously, coming back who were were wounded and needed to be rehabilitated back into the world of work. Now we do have two separate vocational rehabilitations where there is a VA VR and then a state VR in every state. As Victoria said, we do have 13 offices across the state. We have a presence in every high school that is a public high school, some private high schools. We are in every community college and every public university and college as well. We serve on average approximately, 13,000 job candidates every year. 2,321 were able to successfully gain employment with assistance from our office in fiscal year 2015. 95% of successfully employed job candidates who attended college with assistance from IVRS obtained a degree. 6,067 individuals were referred to our office in fiscal year 2015, and our job candidates earn on average $11.72 per hour, averaging 32 hours per week. That's all data from fiscal year 2015. In terms of Iowans, there are over 300,000 individuals in Iowa who have reported some sort of disability. And since we are talking about physical disabilities, 124,000 of those individuals do report a cognitive disability, and 3.8% of those do report some kind of physical disability. And so when we think about the services that Iowa Vocational Rehabilitation offers, as Jan mentioned, we do assist with tuition assistance, but our ultimate goal is employment for individuals, and that's going to look different for every individual. We do believe every individual is unique regarding their no matter what their barriers are or their needs, and we also believe that everyone can work no matter what their barriers are. So if an individual came to IVRS and they wanted to work, we would try to find a way to work with our partners and our resources to make sure that we could get that person to work. The services that we offer range from assisting individuals with disabilities in high school to transition. We work with high school students in hopefully gaining work experience while they're in high school, working on vocational skills, soft skills. That's widely important these days. And that's for that can be for any high school student, not just an individual with disabilities. We help with vocational assessments, career interest assessments. We really use labor market information to help individuals make sure that the job they're getting into, they know what they're going to have to do, what the education is required, are there jobs available, and particularly if they don't plan on leaving Iowa. We don't want to be chasing a job that may not even exist in Iowa, so we really look at labor market information, particularly if the state of Iowa is funding any tuition assistance. We don't want that individual to be in debt, nor the taxpayers to be paying money towards a degree that may not be useful.
Andrea, I have a quick question for you. You mentioned that the average hourly salary or wage for your graduates of your program was around $11.50. That's better than nothing, right, but it is not a livable wage in Iowa. So what happens to people's benefits should they go to work? Can you fill us in a little on that?
Sure. Actually, I'm in the middle of benefits training, benefits planning training. So it all depends on the type of benefits. So SSI, if an individual is working, it is there's a calculation where the person's wages are deducted by $85 and then divided by 2, and then that amount is then subtracted from their $733 SSI check, and then that is then added to the $733.
But people that retain their health benefits under Medicare, I take it, still?
Should the individual lose their Medicaid benefit because they're working and they're receiving SSI, they are able to get what is called Medicaid for Employed People with Disabilities, which is at a very low rate because it would be based on what they're making. It's averaged, or there's a formula on how that would be. So there are a lot of what would I like to say, catch-alls for individuals if they do want to get off benefits. There's several incentives that if you were to work with IVRS, we would make sure you knew all about what those incentives were to work and hopefully get rid of some of the myths that are out there about if I work, I can't get my benefit. But it's been proven if you work and you're on SSI, you will make more than what your $733 is, which is the rate for this year.
Great. Thanks for clarifying that.
Sure. That is a huge issue. We get a lot of individuals that come to us, some younger, and maybe that benefit is helping support their family, and that family is really concerned. I don't maybe want my child to work because we're living off of that benefit. And so we work with them in understanding exactly what I just said is how those benefits, the check might decrease a little bit, but you're making money and you're going to end up with more money than what you started with.
Very good.
Well, it's a valuable service and offers a lot of very positive opportunities for people. But in our conversations, I understand that it's not all flowers and there are some weeds, and that is finding employers. Could you speak to that a little bit?
Absolutely. Part of what we do is not only work with our job candidates, but we also work with various employers. So we also consider the employer our client as well, and we try to work with employers in convincing them, shall I say, to employ some of our individuals with disabilities. So sometimes when we're entering into a business and it's a larger corporation, we do get pushback because they say they have to speak to the general manager, especially if we're doing an assessment. They get concerned about who's going to pay for workers' comp. Even though IVRS is responsible for that, we've explained that. It's still trying to get past that general manager. But there are a few employers. Hy-Vee here in Ames has been remarkable, both of the Hy-Vees. Just a shout out to them. Victoria also asked what could you say to an employer if you were trying to get someone to be open to hiring an individual with a disability? Well, there's several things that are a positive, obviously. Data has shown that individuals with disabilities have a higher retention rate. They show up on time. They take value in their job. Just as Jan had mentioned, how we identify ourselves is what we do. Mm-hmm. And so someone who may have had barriers in life and being able to get a job and they're finally able to get that job, they hang on to it pretty tight. People with disabilities have had to navigate the world that is not always accessible, so they've had to find alternative and innovative solutions. So you get unique perspectives that coming into your workforce. You get immaculate problem-solving skills. As Jan was saying, she had to do several problem-solving skills to navigate, and you create a disability-friendly workplace. We've talked to employers who have said such-and-such individual that is working there has just brought so much to our environment that we can't imagine that person not being here. Another thing is when you, especially in smaller communities like Ames, when you hire an individual with a disability, a lot of times the town is going to know that individual, and they're going to say, hey, that company's hired so-and-so. We're going to give them more business because they're more open to hiring our individuals with disabilities.
And this is where community involvement comes in.
Yep.
Because it's up to all of us to speak to our employers or businesses that we frequent and ask that that be considered as part of their hiring requirements. I just want to remind everyone that you're listening to the Ames Progressive Alliance program on KHOI Local Talk. And today we're talking about the challenges, accessibility challenges, that residents with both physical and intellectual disabilities face. I'm going to turn now to, because I said time was going to go by so quickly, because this is a topic that we could easily spend much more time, and maybe we will in the future, hopefully. Next up, I'd like to turn to Jennifer Ellis with Friendship Arc Homes. Friendship Arc Homes primarily serves adults with intellectual disabilities. However, some core members, which is the term that we use for people who live in the Friendship Friendship Arc homes houses have intellectual and physical disabilities. So you work with all kinds of challenges that require a broad mix of services. So if you could tell us a little bit about Friendship Arc homes, core members, and the many individuals who are connected through transitional living and DAHAB.
Absolutely. Program. Thank you for having me. So Friendship Arc Homes was founded in 1999 here in Ames, and we actually started serving the first person in 2000. So we've been in the Ames community for 16 years. We're a small organization. We have four group homes where we serve people 24 hours a day, and there's five people that live in each home. So we serve 20 in our homes. We also last fall in September started two community-based programs. One, we call it our supported community living, where folks that don't need 24-hour care can live in their own apartments and we can provide supports as needed. So it can be on an hourly basis, maybe a couple of days a week for a couple of hours, whatever level they need to help them be independent and be able to live in their own apartments. And then we also started a community-based DAHAB program. So a lot of times people in the past have shown up at a building or a facility to participate in day programming. And there's a real push to get people out into the communities and get them being a part of and participating in all the activities that are available in their community. And we wanted to be a part of that. So we started our DAHAB program, and it's, as I said, completely community-based. We pick people up at their home. We ask them what they want to do for the day or what they're interested in or what they've seen in the newspaper that's going on that they want to participate in, and we take them into the community to do those activities. So, of course, because of that, we get to see the challenges that are faced when we bring people into the community. And there's been a lot mentioned this morning, but from a service provider standpoint, when we're working with somebody with mobility issues, obviously doors that aren't automated are a challenge. But even more, we have folks that need assistance with hygiene and using the bathroom. And while there are handicap accessible stalls, if you have a female staff working with a male core member, which bathroom do we use? And then we have to clear the bathroom and make sure that there's no one else in there because we have both genders. Those handicap accessible stalls fit a wheelchair, but they may not fit the one or two service people that also need to help that person. Some people need to be taken out of the chair to be changed. There's nowhere but a floor to do that, and that just really is not acceptable. We do our best. We have mats and things like that, but there are a lot of challenges that we face in trying to support people with disabilities. Simple things, like Jan mentioned, thresholds. Last March, we went through an extensive accreditation process, and we decided to do an accessibility survey, and our eyes were really open. We serve people with disabilities daily, but there were small changes that we could make, from signage that better clarifies where the entrances are, door handles. If you have knobs, those are very difficult for people who can't use their hands. So going to the lever type doorknobs, small things that don't cost a lot of money can make a big difference. And then, of course, you can get into much more expensive things. But, you know, from our point of view, if people just kind of start to think about what could we do and maybe be willing to look at an accessibility survey, there are a lot of minor changes that can be made that really make a difference for someone with mobility issues or challenges like that.
And this is someplace builders could come in. I mean, that as part of a sort of a standard universal perspective when doing any kind of building, because we never know who's going to be there.
Mm-hmm. We do have access. Everybody in the state of Iowa, any business has access to the Department of Human Rights, and they will come out and do an ADA accessibility study. And just to mention, the average accommodation, if needed, is $500 or less.
I think we're coming up to the end of our wonderful discussion this morning. I really want to thank our guests, Jan Bauer, Andrea Keith from Iowa Vocational Rehab, and Jennifer Ellis from Friendship Arc Homes. I think I've had my eyes opened this morning to some of the challenges that people have in our community, and I hope our listeners as well. A couple of the great takeaways for me was that we're all in this together, and the expenses that we need are not that high from a fiscal standpoint, but mostly it seems to me recognizing the needs of others in our community and taking often simple but proactive action. So I want to thank you for opening our eyes this morning. Perhaps we can continue the conversation on a later show, because as Victoria said, there's much to talk about. The Local Talk program re-airs today at noon and 7 p.m. It's also archived on the community KHOI community radio websites. The Ames Progressive Alliance also provides photos and an audio clip on our Facebook page. If you'd like to be on our email mail list to receive information about events and topics under discussion, please visit and or message us through our Ames Progressive Alliance Facebook page or send us an message by email to amesprogressivealliance@gmail.com. As you can see, we are quite digitally savvy. The next Ames Progressive Alliance Progressive Pints events will be a discussion about literacy and efforts underway to help students in our Ames Community School District. It'll be at the Alluvial Brewery Company on Thursday, September 15th from 7 to 9 p.m. We hope you'll join us on September 15th. I think there's a little theme here. The Ames Progressive Alliance, we do like our breweries, but we're really about issues. Also, the Green Umbrella at Iowa State University and the Ames Progressive Alliance will be helping to put the Food at First garden to bed for 2016. A work day is planned for Sunday, October 2nd from 1 to 4, followed by a potluck at the church. Come join us. The Food at First garden is located at Trinity Christian Reformed Church, 3626 Ontario Street in West Ames. That sounds like a fun event. A little garden work before the winter comes, a potluck. I think I might be there. Good work continues with the efforts to build relationships and understanding with citizens of color in the Ames community. The Progressive Alliance helped organize a gathering at the Body of Christ Church recently in early August, which brought members, community members together with officers from the Ames Police Department and the ISU Department of Public Safety. Many of us were meeting for the first time, and knowing each other and our issues is critically important. Smaller conversations on next steps have been maintained, and the Alliance has requested that the City of Ames Human Relations Commission incorporate ongoing strategies to bring citizens in our community together. We invite all of you to participate in our community building meetings and social gatherings. So on behalf of this Ames Progressive Alliance, I want to thank our guests. I want to thank my co-host, Victoria Shapinski, and KHOI Radio. So looks forward to seeing you next month.
And I'm going to add one more thing, seeing Jennifer is here, and put in a plug for the Friendship Arc Homes annual fall benefit, which will be held on October 14th this year at the CPMI Event Center. And we'll put some information about that out. It's on the Friendship Arc Homes website, and we'll put something on our Facebook page also. So thank you to all of you, Jan Bauer, Andrea Keith, and Jennifer Ellis, for joining us today. And thanks, KHOI.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is what it's all about, community through communication. Great to have you here. We'll look forward to the fourth Friday of next month to have you on again, Ames Progressive Alliance. I must say that I'm always impressed with the amount of preparation that you folks do in your own learning and in lining up such well-informed and interesting guests to really educate us about whatever issue it is that you're bringing to our attention. So I appreciate that, and I know our listeners do too, and also the update on other things that Ames Progressive Alliance has going on is really helpful. So glad to have you here. Next, we're going to North Dakota. Pat Schlaubaum, one of our Local Talk reporters, brings us this update from two activists who are part of the camp set up along the Missouri and Cannonball Rivers with the purpose of blocking the Bakken pipeline from being constructed across sacred Indian lands.
I'm currently sitting in Bismarck. I am with my friend and colleague, Joy Braun. Joy and I have both been involved in the struggle to protect water from North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, and Illinois from a massive crude oil pipeline that is being built and run by Dakota Access, a Texas-based company. I've been involved in the struggle for several years, going on three now. We have organized a remarkable coalition in Iowa called the Bakken Pipeline Resistance Coalition. We've joined forces and made common cause with our friends in North and South Dakota to block this pipeline. A number of the tribes have created a camp in North Dakota. There are a number of tribes that are known in, say, Iowa as the Sioux. They're the Ocheti Shakowin. Mm-hmm. If I said that right, and Joy can correct me. Mm-hmm. And there are a number of different groups of them, the Sisseton, Pine Ridge, Yankton, Standing Rock, many others. Mm-hmm. And then additional tribes have come in to support them. At this point in the camp, on the Cannonball River, with tribes and the Sacred Stone Camp has currently blocked construction from the west side. They have now about 30 or more tribes, and the list is long. So whether it's the Nez Perce or whether it's the Comanche and the Ponca and the Pawnee and the Navajo and the Hopi, the Onondaga, the list is unbelievable. And what is surprising is I think how few of those tribes most Americans could name. And yet they have gathered here on the Cannonball and the Missouri River in a historic gathering to stop this pipeline. My friend Joy Braun has been incredibly important in that mm-hmm. struggle, creating the Sacred Stone Camp here. And we've partnered together across these states to do everything that we can using direct action and all the legal tools, employing all the legal tools that we've got to stop this.
And Carolyn, you are an attorney?
I am an attorney, and I know that most people blanch at that idea, but I see my job as a lawyer to defend the defenders. It's one of the reasons that I'm up here at the camp, at the Ocheti Shakowin camp and the Sacred Stones camp, to help protect and defend mm-hmm. the people who get arrested in direct action, but also to help coordinate the vast legal activities that are going on. Mm-hmm. So the mm-hmm. Standing Rock Sioux filed an action with the United Nations for human rights violations. So there are things going on at the UN mm-hmm. this week in federal court in Washington, D.C. The tribes are calling for an injunction for Dakota Access to stop work mm-hmm. on the Missouri River.
Is this a result of the Treaty of Laramie 1868?
There are treaties that have been invoked in this. Joy can explain the relationship of the treaties to federal law better than I can. But the tribes have legal rights that are recognized by the United States under the U.S. Constitution that grant them those rights under those treaties. And part of what this action is to enforce those treaty rights. And as a lawyer and as someone who believes in the rule of law, when it conforms to justice, then we're trying to enforce those, and the tribes have brought actions to enforce those. So part of the federal law requires the U.S. government to consult with the tribes when there are federal actions that affect their lands, their future. The case that's being heard in D.C. on the 24th is to stop construction until those other lawsuits can be heard and decided. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, Dakota Access is just going to keep on going, even though their lawsuits, the lawsuits have been filed, and it could be too late if mm-hmm. The injunction is not granted.
Well, let's welcome Joy Braun to provide overview of how she felt most effectively addressing this egregious act against the earth.
Yes, well, she is an extraordinary warrior in her own right. Mm-hmm. And as Joy tells me, she is often the face of this, and there are so many people behind her. And I am the witness mm-hmm. to the group that Joy has put into place and that have joined her. So many of them are very young and are taking extraordinary responsibility. Mm-hmm. So here's Joy.
This is Joy Braun.
Thank you, and welcome. What is your nation, Ms. Braun?
I am Cheyenne River Sioux. I'm Lakota.
And you're currently hospitalized?
Yeah, I got pneumonia.
Oh, gee. Have you been burning the candles at both ends?
Oh, definitely.
Well, what is your overall vision? I understand there's quite a few nations joining your effort.
There's a lot of nations. This is absolutely historic. The tribes like this, I don't think have ever met for this many tribes, and we certainly haven't met in this numbers since June 25th, 1876, at the Battle of the Greasy Grass, but the American government call Battle of Little Bighorn, when we killed Custer and took the American flag.
So this is a gathering. This is, you feel necessary for, is it for clean water?
It's we have to remember that water is life. We have a term in our language called Miniwichoni, which means water is life. We start out in water in our womb, and without water, there is no life. There's nothing. I always challenge people, go 24 hours a day without water. Not to bathe, not to drink, not to have in your coffee, not to have in your tea or your pop or your juice, anything. And see how you feel after 24 hours.
I'm sure that our listeners are aware of the alternatives to the oil, the energy that oil creates. And yet there doesn't seem to be many alternatives to water.
There is no alternative to water. There's lots of different alternatives for everything that oil can produce and make. Mm-hmm. But there's absolutely no alternative for water. Mm-hmm. We have to protect water. And, you know, this goes beyond not just water. This goes into tribal sovereignty. It goes into enforcing our treaty rights, the 1851 Fort Laramie Treaty, which is specific to this particular piece of land, and Docket 74A, which covers Dakota lands, all of which have been terribly trespassed upon. The different tribes have asked for formal consultation, as required by different CFRs under the federal law, and were given lip service and forked-tongued answers, and ignored, specifically the Yankton Sioux Tribe. So Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe, which is a sister nation to Standing Rock, in fact, our borders touch one another, has filed an injunction as well against Dakota Access Energy Transfer Partners. And we just got word yesterday that their injunction will be allowed as part of as an intervener status in the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe lawsuit in federal court, which is a big win. So therefore, we're looking forward to Yankton being granted that same permission as well.
So things are day-to-day. I might share that we have this phone connection this time, but at the site, I understand you're not able to use cell phone service
or it's very sporadic.
Are those signals being scrambled?
Yeah, they are. I am witness to the fact that the highway patrol was speaking to the pilot, and the pilot was telling the highway patrol, turn your phones off. I'm going to go ahead and scramble now.
Oh,
we heard it. Eyewitness.
Well, we'll try to keep up day to day. Thank you for all your efforts for the earth, Ms. Braun.
And we fully expect about 5,000 people to be camped there in the next day or two. Mm-hmm. Right now, there's about 2,000 people.
I see. So the action is underway. We would welcome the opportunity. Give us a call when you have cell phone signals, and we'll try to get the word out in our listening area and possibly even nationwide, worldwide. This has worldwide implications.
This has huge worldwide implications for indigenous people around the world.
Is there anything else?
We do have a GoFundMe, GoFundMe/Sacred Stone Camp, and we do have links for the legal defense fund and whatnot.
Thank you, Carolyn. Thank you, Ms. Braun. This is 89.1 KHOI Community Radio of the Heartland here in Ames, Iowa.
That was Pat Schlarbaum, one of our reporters for Local Talk, speaking with Joy Braun and Carolyn Raffensperger about the action in North Dakota. And we had an update from Carolyn last night, who let us know that international observers, including Amnesty International, had arrived at the site to document what was going on. There's a great deal of interest in how this action is progressing. So stay tuned to KHOI for more on this story in coming weeks. We'll be bringing you periodic updates from North Dakota on this action to block the Bakken pipeline from crossing Native American sacred lands. Thanks to Pat for bringing us that today. Now we'll turn to a guest who just arrived in our studio. Our listeners, I think, will be surprised to hear our next guest on Local Talk because he's not usually here in the morning. We're joined by Doug Gentile of the Tom and Doug Show. And why are you here at this early hour of the day?
Well, I'm here because the phone was ringing and someone needed to answer it. And it turns out Tom.
Hi. Hey, Doug.
Hi, Tom.
Yes?
What are we doing here?
We're doing everything. We're doing everything that we could ever do because we're talking about this wonderful event that's going to happen in about 9 days on the 4th of September.
Oh, yeah? What's that?
Well, for no particular reason at all, we're going to be playing a concert, and we're going to have a wonderful little episode of our TV puppet show that we'll be showing, which is all about Ames, Iowa, and the puppet history of Ames, Iowa.
So this is going to happen down here at the KHOI studios on Sunday, September 4th, starting about 1 o'clock, going till about 3 or 4. We're just going to have a party, a Tom and Doug KHOI party here at the studios. Anyone can come down, and we will be playing some live music. Besides Tom and myself, we will have a couple other third Tom and Dougs. We will have Joe Bezik, who's been heard on our show many times, and the local.
And we're going to have food.
And food, yeah. He can't stop himself. You're pretty excited about that food, aren't you?
Food is great. I like food. Yeah. I do it almost every day.
And we're going to have local legend Sean Houston performing with the band as well.
Very good. Yes, and it'll be all sorts of fun. I believe the price we've negotiated is free.
Free? I hate that price.
Yeah, that's our favorite price. Well, we'll double it just to make you happy.
Okay, good, 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 good.
Okay.
And you said, so now I'm not sure that the listeners here on KHOI know a whole lot about our TV show because we also, besides the weekly syndicated radio show, we also have a television show where there are puppet versions of us.
Yes, we've created, we don't create, you can see the real us, and the real us happen to be puppets. People don't really know that we are actually puppets.
Yeah, well, I've had many people guess that.
Yeah, but this way you can actually see us on two-dimensional flesh on a TV screen.
Now we have
the way people like to experience.
We have a special guest on that puppet show. Who is it?
The world-famous Ursula Rudenberg, and she's going to talk about her family's history of puppets in Ames, Iowa, because the Ames Puppet Theater, which took place in the 60s, 70s, 80s, is something that she has a lot of knowledge about because her mother ran that.
Yeah, so we will be showing that down here at this station.
Will there be an Ursula puppet, or will she be there in person?
Yeah, she's there in person.
The Ursula puppet looks amazingly like the real Ursula.
And it's life size.
Yeah, yes.
Cool.
So, now, Gail.
Yes.
You're a member of the station?
A member, yes.
Uh-huh. So this is one of those things that, you know, is a special treat just for members. Come down, be part of, the KHOI community. Come down, and even if people aren't members, they should come mm-hmm. down and see what it's all about because it's just a lot of fun.
A lot of fun.
We will have music. We may record some things for our show. And the Tom and Doug Show is KHOI's first nationally syndicated show. It's the first show produced here at KHOI that goes out across the country on the Pacifica Network.
Pacifica Network, right.
So, we've got people complaining about us all over the country.
And they're blaming Ames.
Yes.
It's nice to be known for something.
Right. So this will be a party, an event.
Mm-hmm.
People are welcome. You've told all the things that will be a part of it. So it's not going to be a live broadcast, but you may take segments of it for your upcoming shows?
Yes, exactly. Trying to do a concert as a live broadcast takes away a lot of the opportunity to really interact with the crowd because, you know, live show, you don't want these big pauses like that one. yeah. And so you've got to just keep things moving like that, which doesn't really allow for it to be as spontaneous and realistic, you know. So we're just going to, you know, have some fun. We're going to play some songs. We'll show our TV show. I hear that, in fact, we've been requested. Tom has a magic radio program that helps us produce our weekly show. So for those of you in the audience who are interested in how do you create a weekly show, particularly something like this where it's got multiple segments in it, Tom has a magic program that he's been requested by Ursula to demonstrate at that party. So for people who are interested in the secrets of radio, this would be a fun thing to come see as well.
We're going to pull the cloak off of how we create the show.
Oh, like the Wizard of Oz and behind the curtain.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll look
it's like Penn and Teller.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. So is this unprecedented or has this happened, something like this happened before here at KHOI in relation to your show?
Well, we've done concerts before, but we've never had sort of a relaxed event in the daytime before. So it's sort of unprecedented, uh-huh. Partially precedented.
Okay.
Yeah, we've done a few benefit concerts, usually around the birthday, and this is KHOI's fourth birthday.
That's right. August is our birthday month.
Yeah, and so instead of doing a full-fledged benefit concert, we figured let's just celebrate this time.
Mm-hmm. Great. But people, while they're here, could decide to become members.
Yes.
Or throw a little something in the donate bucket.
Mm-hmm.
But really, we just want people to come out and enjoy KHOI and honor our first syndicated show. Maybe honor's too strong a word for you.
I'm basking in that word. No one uses that word usually.
When speaking about the Tom and Doug show.
Yeah. Oh, man. Tom, do you think someone would ever say that a second time?
Definitely not. Definitely not.
I should take it back.
Rumored that we might try, if we get people who are game, we might do 5-minute interviews with people who just show up and to do on the show, which would be fun too.
And I think, of course, we should go back to the most important point, which you stressed earlier, pizza and beer.
Yeah.
Free
and
pizza
beer too?
And, yeah, oh yeah, because, you know.
I don't know if we're allowed to have beer, but what do you find out?
We'll have to look into that. I don't know. So tell us again where it is and when it is. Yeah, remind people.
Well, it's going to be right here at the KHOI studios in the fabulous Pantorium building down here on Douglas Street in the heart of Ames on Sunday, September 4th, beginning at 1 o'clock, going until about 3:30 or so.
Okay, so come on down and Tom will be here in person and in puppet form.
Correct.
As will Doug. So thank you both for being here early in the morning. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Doug.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Looking forward to it. Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Thanks for listening today. I've been your host, Gail Seiler. Thanks to all of our guests from the Ames Progressive Alliance via the pre-recorded broadcast with Carolyn Raffensperger and Joy Braun, and lastly, Doug Gentile and Tom Florek. You can listen to all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org, and listen to today's show. There you will also find contact information and links for the people and places we talked about. Local Talk was engineered by Evan Taylor. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. KHOI is a community radio station that is driven by volunteers and made possible by donations from individuals, businesses, and organizations in the community. You can become a member or donate at any time, and you can do that on our website, khoifm.org. Look for the donate button and click it. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a radio show, which means that you can be part of our team of volunteer producers and reporters. If you'd like to join the team, contact us at 292-2878 or through our website, khoifm.org, or just come into the studio located on Douglas, right off Main in downtown Ames. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation is what makes KHOI possible. We need you as a listener and a supporter. Thank you for listening and see you again on the radio.